Good evening.
Good evening.
Can everyone hear?
Yes.
There's been some talk about this microphone not being, but everybody can hear?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So if you've read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, I know you've come across Suzuki Roshi's phrase where he says, we have to have a general housekeeping of our mind. That's pretty good. Housekeeping, where you take things out and then you put things back. You put them back and they are reorganized. He's saying what we have to do is clean out the things in our mind that we don't need anymore. We should do that in order to make space for new things. General housekeeping. And this is the foundation of our practice, to continually make space for new things. Give things an opportunity to appear. So the mind of Zen practice is actually a mind of continual renewal. The mind that freshens itself by letting go, discarding the useless, the old and the useless. Those things that are not relevant anymore. General housekeeping of our mind. And this is how we return to our true self, through this general housekeeping. When we have this attitude, this orientation, continually housekeeping, house cleaning, we are refreshing our life each moment. Moment by moment, we refresh our life. We reorganize our life. Instead of clinging to old ways, old ideas, and old habits, and those habitual ways of seeing. If we continue our habitual ways, and if we continue to cling to old ideas without housekeeping, we cannot refresh our life. We cannot renew our life. Our mind just becomes more and more cluttered. Being a little startled back in the long time ago when this country invaded Iraq. I was very surprised to learn, to discover that the people, many people in Iraq were very excited, glad that the Americans were coming. I was very surprised by that. And I read somewhere where a reporter asked an Iraqi man why he was so happy to see the Americans come into his country. And he said, democracy, whiskey, sexy. And it occurred to me that that was the way the rest of the world saw us, this culture, through the media, of course, through television, of course, and other publications. That was the way the world saw our culture, And also, it occurred to me, that was this man's idea of happiness. Democracy, whiskey, sexy. Excitement and fun. And pleasure. He felt that these things that the Americans would bring would make him happy. And I thought about this for a long time. And this country is founded on that idea of the pursuit of happiness, or maybe on a mistaken idea of what that means. But anyway, pursuit of happiness has always been part of this society. And for this man in Iraqi, it meant democracy, whiskey, sexy. Does it mean the same for us here? Do we know the real meaning of happiness? Is it about the things that give us pleasure? Is it something that we can obtain by pursuing them, or having them given to us? The usual understanding of happiness is it is something to be gained. We have to work hard to gain happiness. This is the idea of the modern world. This is the idea of our culture. But the truth is, the real truth is that whatever we gain through pursuing it, pursuing them, pursuing it, whatever we gain is temporary. Can't last. It will fade away. Whatever we gain, can't hold on to it. This is the nature of things. And this is, of course, the primary teaching of our practice, of Buddhism. It's all temporary. It's all transient. So it's a mistaken idea to pursue such things. And the problem for us occurs when we don't understand this truth. Pursuing things that we can't hang on to. So the Buddha's teaching of Buddha, the fundamental teaching of the Buddhist way, is that all things change, constantly change. Nothing remains the same. And when we truly understand this truth, then we truly understand the nature of reality. When we truly understand this point about change, then we know that the possessions that might make us feel happy cannot remain. So we learn to no longer pursue them or cling to them. And without this understanding of the nature of change, we're always at risk of being disappointed. Deeper than that, we're always at risk for suffering, losing the things that we have pursued so hard. Well, suffering arises when we want conditions that will not change, that we can hold on to, that can provide us lasting pleasure. But this is impossible. Things won't remain the same. Without this understanding, we will suffer. So, true happiness requires that we do understand the nature of reality, the nature of life. True happiness is not acquiring whiskey and sexy. True happiness occurs when we find our composure in the midst of impermanence and continuous change. When we find our composure. So the Buddhist, if somebody says, "Are you a Buddhist?" and you say, "Yes." What makes you a Buddhist? You say, "Because I prefer composure to excitement. I'd rather have peace of mind than excitement." If we ignore, or if we deny the impermanent nature of things, we are living in a dream world. I guess I'll call it a bubble. And the ideal that we envision for this dream world is just not attainable. Even though we wish for things to be permanent, that's not the nature of reality. So the harder we wish for this permanence, and the harder, the more desperately we grasp for things to be permanent, the more we suffer. The more disoriented our life is. And this is what the Buddha meant when he talked about the world of suffering. So, the Buddhist, or the one who is dedicated to practice, understands that it's not about excitement and pleasure. That's not where happiness is. To have true happiness, we have to have a mind that accepts the truth of things. We have to see things as changing, not as permanent. Which means we are able to let go and make space in our mind for renewal. This is how we go about the general housekeeping of our mind. And this is the mind of composure and equanimity. So the reality of our life is that we seem to be two-sided, like a coin. We seem to be two-sided, or have two dimensions. One dimension is here, tonight, in this form, with this body and this mind, this form that carries this individual self in our daily life, this form that has relationships that experiences birth and death, that it experiences joys and sorrows. The other dimension is not here. It's constantly changing. So just when you think it's here, it's gone. This is our other dimension, it's the not here dimension. So Zen teaching tells us there is no birth, there is no death, there are no things. This is the true dimension. The dimension that you can't pin down, that is never here. This dimension, this side of our reality, is impossible to understand intellectually. If you start to think about it, you say, "What? I don't get it." It's impossible to understand the truth that these two opposites, these two dimensions of ourself, the here and the not here, they can exist as one. You can't think it through. So Suzuki Roshi said, two sides of the same coin, but that's just an approximation. Our two dimensions are not side by side or in opposition to each other. They are, in fact, one. And when we practice, we have the chance to experience this truth. So it is only through practice that we will be able to accept this apparent conflict. But in the eyes of Buddhist practitioner, this conflict is just an appearance. It's not real. There is no conflict. There is no conflict between the dimension of us that's here, right now, that has a name and a form, and problems to solve tomorrow. That dimension that's here and the dimension that's not here. There is no conflict between those two. So through our practice, we are able to live our life as we are, not in conflict with ourself. And this is happiness, not the pursuit of something, but the recognition of who we are and the oneness of our two dimensions. So, when people first come to practice here or anywhere else, when people first come to practice, they don't understand exactly. They don't understand exactly why they came. Usually there's a feeling of there would be something to gain by looking into Zen practice. Maybe it's wisdom. Maybe it's to solve some problem. Maybe it's to find happiness. But if we come to practice to gain something, we are in pursuit. And the pursuit of something cannot satisfy us. And that's one reason why people get discouraged by the practice. That's one reason why people quite often cannot find the effort to put into practice. So, if our life is consists of pursuing various goals, and we find that we become anxious through this effort, it means we feel that we're not getting what we want, not being satisfied, not being made happy. But if we come to practice and stick with it a little bit, even if we feel not getting what I came for, if we stick with it, we eventually understand that something is happening. We don't know exactly what it is, but something is occurring. And little bit by little bit, our understanding and our composure increases. But usually it's so subtle that we're not aware of it. It's like watching a plant grow. It's growing, but if you stand there and watch it, you can't become aware of it. It's only when you come back later that you can see something has changed. And that's the way our practice is. We can't detect our growth moment by moment, but we know something is happening. And it's like looking at a rose in the garden. Our experience tells us this plant is doing very well. In our practice, we trust that this is happening until our experience verifies it for us. So we need to trust this practice. That is not based on the intellect or the reason, or reasoning. We simply sit in silence without any idea of gaining anything or improving ourselves. We just allow ourselves to be ourselves. And that self is both here and not here. That self is both being and non-being. So as Suzuki Roshi once said, the reason we are drawn to this practice is because Buddha is expressing Buddha nature through us. When we practice together, like we are doing tonight, we are expressing our shared true nature. So perhaps the most profound and inexplicable teaching of our practice is that everyone is Buddha. And when you first hear that, you say, you're kidding. How is that possible? But this is the teaching, and this is the truth. Everyone is Buddha. This is the truth of who we are. And when we begin to accept that truth and feel it, we find that the difficulties and the suffering in our life diminish and no longer give us a problem. So part of our practice is to free our mind from too much intellectual thinking, too much analytical thinking. And that's hard these days. We try to give our mind a rest, give our mind a break from judging right and wrong, good and bad, discriminating whether we like something or don't like something. And how we free our mind from this trap is we refresh it moment by moment. So we begin our practice by learning how to breathe, putting our attention on each breath. This is how we refresh our mind moment by moment, coming back to our breath. Our emphasis is to be who we are in this world right now without being concerned with who we want to be in the future and without being concerned about who we were in the past. Just, who am I now? So happiness cannot come to us if we acquire whiskey and sexy. Happiness can appear only in the mind that is free, free from attachments. The quiet mind of composure and equanimity. That sees into its true nature. And this is why we practice. Does anyone have a question? Yes, please.
How does the value of courage fit in the Zen tradition?
How does the value of courage
fit?
Oh, good question. It's the starting point. Without the courage or the determination, well, we soon become discouraged and fall back into bad habits. The courage to learn to let go of the things in our life that hold us back, that we're comfortable with, the courage to let go of things we're comfortable with, but that are getting in the way, that's important. Thank you.
Is there something beyond these two things?
What two things?
The The way I hear it is form and emptiness. But is there something beyond? Do we go beyond that?
Beyond form and emptiness? Can you go beyond form and emptiness?
If they're both concepts, I guess one could. We made up these ideas. Buddha made up this. I don't know. Seems like yes.
So, when we go beyond all distinctions. So earlier we chanted form is emptiness and emptiness is form. Form is form, emptiness is emptiness, which means we can talk about such things, but there really is no distinction. There's a coin, but there are no two sides. Just coin. No coin. So we go beyond the metaphors, go beyond the lectures, go beyond the writings and the teachings, and just sit. And let all distinctions evaporate. So it is going beyond, but it is also not going beyond. Oh, excuse me. Yes, please. Yes. Oh, okay. Yes.
I guess a question, comment. It would seem to me that keeping your composure in the face of impermanence is in itself exciting. And I don't see excitement as being diametrically opposed to having composure in the face of the unknown or impermanence. And an example, when I fight in judo, judo is very violent. Keeping my composure in the face of the unknown, of what my opponent will do, of what I'm trying to do, that in and of itself is the ultimate excitement for me. And it would seem to me it would be the same in life, that if you can keep your composure in the face of the unknown, of impermanence, that in and of itself is very exciting.
I'm saying you can be excited and composed at the same time.
Right.
It's not excitement in the usual sense. It's more like a satisfaction or a knowing or a confidence. When we are composed, our mind is still. And when we are excited, usually our mind is quite busy or active. So excitement may not be the best way to explain what you mean. More like deep satisfaction. But I get your point. Thank you. This is Umar.
That's he's saying is, could it be interpreted, excitement could be interpreted as readiness of the mind. If the mind is composed, it's also, there's a readiness of the mind to accept what it has to deal with. Can it be looked at that way?
You know, excitement usually includes anticipation of some really nice thing that's going to happen to us to give us pleasure. When we are composed, we don't have that kind of anticipation. We're just present.
So whatever comes, we just deal with it when we're composed.
We just take care of it.
Yeah.
Just take care of it. Just live with it. Just express ourselves in taking care of it. Thank you. Bonnie. Yeah, I think this is known as delusion. Thank you. Yes, Jaya.
I really wanted to thank you and appreciate you pointing out how
I think many of us that come to the practice and practice for years, we come initially with the idea that we're going to gain something. And I think you mentioned that the changes are so subtle. And you gave this really, this beautiful example of the flower that starts growing and blossoming. But I was thinking to myself, and I was trying to, and I thought about this a lot, is that if I try to pinpoint what those changes are, it's really hard to articulate. And I didn't know if you had some, or if you can articulate those, what those subtle changes may be that you were referring to.
Someday, after practicing for a time, someday it may occur to you that you didn't react to the remark that somebody made, whereas a few months ago you might have gotten angry, and you realize you've become tolerant and patient. And forgiving. And you notice it. Oh, something happened. It's like this seed got planted some months ago, and today you go out into your garden, and there's this flower. So you notice that you've become, generally speaking, you've become softer. And less troubled. Yes, please.
I'm wondering if it might be some things like pride and shame that might be differentiators of the kind of excitement that might get in the way of composure.
Yes, they do. You know, if we have pride for something that we've done, or something that we're doing, or something that we've said. Pride feels pretty good, and we try to hold it. But what was said or done is already history, and we can't hold on to it. So pride is about clinging to something that no longer exists. But we don't see it that way. If we hit a home run and we feel proud of it, if we carry that pride to our next at-bat, we're going to have a problem because we have to start fresh. And shame is the same thing. Concern for something that's past. We have to start fresh. and find a way to be creative. So yes, those two emotions get in the way of composure. They trouble us. Yes, Lee?
When I first started this practice, I found myself sitting down and asking, who am I? And I would be answering where I came from, what I had done, you know, what people had told me I was or people told me I should be. And all of these, you know, these identity that we build up, my thoughts, I'm thinking these thoughts, it's me, but really, is it me? You know, does that define me? And so, isn't it that part of the process that we go through in opening up and in, instead of tying down our concept of what we are capable of and who we are, little by little we let go of these things that basically hold us back. You know, they prevent us from seeing with fresh view what's right here and right now. So, do you think that is a good thing for people starting out to, you know, to sort of have that conversation with themselves from time to time? Is this who I am, or is this just a thought that I'm thinking? Who am I really? You know,
yes, it that is a good way to start practice. Ask the fundamental question. Who am I? There's a pretty famous Zen story where the teacher says to the student, show me your face before your parents were born, which is another way of saying, who are you really? Yes, it's a fundamental exercise for Zen students. Thank you. Yes, please.
When you know if enough is enough to suffering.
I'm sorry?
When do you know enough is enough suffering, what it means changing your family and life?
To do with your family. And I can't
hear. When do you know enough is enough suffering? What it means to change your life, change your family.
Oh. You can look at your life with honesty, without fooling yourself. When we have the courage, somebody asked about courage, when we have the courage to say, this is how it is, really. And that would include noticing how we fool ourselves and how we delude ourselves. So we know we have to make change when we see things clearly, without confusion. So the when, the exact timing of the when is really up to us. And how how dedicated we are to looking at things clearly. It's up to us. Thank you. So, do we have any announcements tonight? Yes, Carolina.
This Saturday, the 3rd of June, we have our introduction to